America Radio proudly presents the Tom Hartman Program. Welcome to the Free Speech Zone.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you on Air America Radio, broadcasting live coast to coast. Dan Rather may be the most famous journalist in the world. He's covered virtually every major event in the world in the past 50 years. His resume reads like a history book, from his early local reporting in Texas on Hurricane Carla to his unparalleled work covering the assassination of President John F. Kennedy, the Civil Rights Movement, the White House and national politics, wars in Vietnam, Afghanistan, the Persian Gulf, Yugoslavia, and Iraq. From his first day as the Associated Press reporter in Huntsville, Texas in 1950, Rather has more than earned his reputation as the hardest-working man in broadcast journalism. He served as an anchor and managing editor of the CBS Evening News from March 9, 1981 to March 9, 2005, the longest such tenure in broadcast journalism history, and I would add, in my opinion, one of the most deserved, one of the finest reporters probably in the history of this nation. Now the anchor and managing editor of Dan Rather Reports, which started broadcasting HDNet in November 2006. HD.net, www.hd.net is the website. I encourage you to check it out, because tonight Dan Rather has an extraordinary special on. Dan Rather, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Tom, and thank you for that generous introduction. I'm unworthy of it, but I'm very appreciative of it.
Oh, you're not. You started in broadcast television, I think, the year that I was born, or the year before, in 1950. I was born in 51, and I grew up with you. I mean, you and the work that you have done, I so miss. We have gone from news to infotainment, which is a whole different topic, I guess. Let's talk, though, about this special you're doing. I watched part of it last night. There's a trailer that's, you know, all over the web. And you start with this discussion of the Christine Jennings race down in Florida.
Right. Well, what happened, and one of the reasons I was interested in doing this program, that, you know, we're right back in Florida once yet again, trying to find out important questions about voting equipment, voter intent, why in so many cases voters' votes are not registered properly and not counted. Now, I want to emphasize, Tom, that, you know, this program doesn't have an agenda in terms of any partisan political ship. But once again in Florida, in the 2006 election, they had this election in which there were enormous questions about why so many voters, according to the machines that were used, didn't vote in the most important race in their district. It'd be one thing if it were just a few votes or maybe a few hundred votes, but thousands upon thousands of people, according to the machines, chose not to vote for a candidate or in the most important race. So
for the U.S. House of Representatives.
That for the House of Representatives. So the race was decided by only a few hundred votes out of many thousands cast. And lo and behold, because the machines don't have a paper record anywhere of what happened to votes, when you get into a recount situation or challenge a situation, you don't have the information that you need. But the touchscreen system, which is used in so many places in the country, it has a lot of problems, and these problems are well known by election officials. And we got to the touch screens because everybody was appalled by the punch card system that was used in Florida in 2000. Now, 7 years after the debacle of the 2000 election, 7 years afterward, billions of dollars of taxpayer money going in trying to fix the problem, we still have problems. And what this program does tonight is tell you what the workers, among other things, it tells you what the workers who put the equipment together, what their concerns were as they were putting the equipment together, what they told their company superiors. They said, look, we got problems with these touch screens. They don't work as they're supposed to work. And the company's response, well, you'll see it tonight, was basically, let's keep these things moving. Let's get the equipment out. We got to get this out. And there are plenty of scientists, Tom, who are worried about the potential, and the potential is there, of people hacking into these touchscreen systems, and manipulating elections? And that's an important question. But the more important question, the bigger worry, is the reliability of the machines. And the people who made the machines, they do tell you straight out on this program, from the very beginning, we had problems with them. We tried to tell management we had problems with them, and they made some efforts to improve them, but they're just inherent problems.
Yeah, this is the Teletech factory in the Philippines run by the Ching family in Manila, which has its own problems.
I'd be surprised, Tom, if many people aren't surprised when they see, did you know that the touchscreen equipment is made in Manila, the Philippines, run by a family that they have a widely questioned reputation, I think would be the best way to say it. With components that come from, among other places, mainland China, and the company is rooted in Venezuela. Now, stop and think for a moment what I've just said. The machines are made in the Philippines by the Ching family, which has a widely questioned reputation, with some components from Taiwan and mainland China, and the company is run out of Venezuela. Is this any way to run elections? Leave it for people to decide.
Well, and this raises a larger issue that is virtually absent in the broad discussion, and I'm not sure if you cover it in your special tonight. We're talking with Dan Rather, his special tonight on HD.net. It's on HDTV. If you want it, schedules and times, it'll be tonight. I believe it's at 8 o'clock Eastern time, but it check your local listings. But HD.net, you can find how and where you can see this tonight. And that's the issue of privatization. If it's a small crime against democracy to privatize the concession stand at Yellowstone and take part of our national treasure and turn it into a profit center, or to privatize schools if we would consider it absurd to, for example, privatize a court system, we'd just say, well, we'd never do that. Why would we privatize the beating heart of democracy, the vote, the thing that is the means by which we tell our elected officials, this is how we want you to administer the commons that we collectively own?
Well, characteristically, Tom, you've gone to the red beating heart of the question. And I'm not surprised your audience is growing everywhere, because that's very insightful. Exactly so, that we have outsourced building and supplying of our voting equipment, and the people to whom we've outsourced it have in turn outsourced it to, among others, all kinds of foreign interests. Now, let's stop right there. Is this any way to run elections? The privatization, I would say this, if you never met anybody who believes stronger in private enterprise, but when you privatize and outsource the building of election equipment, there absolutely has to be, this is not a partisan issue, it's absolutely imperative that you have quality control and accountability. And the quality control, as this program tonight lays out very clearly, the quality control in many cases is virtually non-existent. In the cases where there is some quality control, the record shows that it doesn't work very well. There's no transparency with these companies. That one of the things that viewers will learn from this program tonight is there is a disturbing amount of secrecy about our elections. The companies that manufacture these machines, they stonewalled us. That's one thing. We're journalists. But more importantly, they stonewall everybody else. There's no transparency about how they make these machines. They hide behind what they call trade secrets, quote unquote. Just like Coca-Cola says, listen, we can't give you the formula for Coke because it's a trade secret.
But the formula for Coke is not the heartbeat of democracy.
No. And with McDonald's says it's a trade secret about the sauce for McDonald's hamburgers. Well, forgive my reporter's French, what the hell? That has to do with hamburgers and Coca-Cola. We're talking about the vitals of democracy. So there's got to be transparency and there's got to be accountability. If the machines don't work, you've got to be accountable. And the officials who buy the machines have to be made accountable.
Yeah, and you've done an extraordinary job in this special, at least what I've seen of it, and I'll be looking for it tonight. We're talking with Dan Rather, his special tonight on HDTV. HD.net is the website for the HDNet home. And Dan Rather, can you stick around for a minute? I'd like to talk with you for a few minutes about the state of journalism in America, if you're
sure, be glad to.
I would be very, very, very much appreciate that. We have to take a break. It's 16 minutes past the hour. We're talking with Dan Rather. Tom Hartman here with you on Air America Radio.
You're tuned in to the Tom Hartman Program. Fair and slightly unbalanced. This is Air America Radio.
My ballot go, whoa, whoa. Lost my faith in the government when they changed the rules without my consent. Don't wanna be nobody's experiment. Just wanna know where my ballot went. They lost my vote. I made my choice. Does anybody care to hear my voice? They lost my vote. Was that the plan? Nobody knows that I took a stand.
And if you want to learn all about it, check out HD.net for Dan Rather Reports. Tonight, 8 o'clock Eastern Time on system, cable systems, satellite systems, TV, all over the country. You can find it, and also on the website, all the information right there. Dan Rather with us on the line. This extraordinary special that you're doing, Dan, tonight about the nature, the problems with the voting machines and going all the way back to the Philippines and the factory and everything. This is serious investigative reporting. Why is serious investigative reporting not happening in the United States any longer, by and large?
Well, among the reasons are the following, in no particular order. Investigative reporting, it takes time, and it takes a lot of resources, and it takes it's expensive. And even the largest of the news organizations, let's face it, I have no illusions at HDNet with our weekly program, Dan Rather Reports, you know, we're a small outfit. And with this particular program about the integrity of our voting process, we poured ourselves into it. But one reason is it takes a long time, it takes a lot of resources, it takes a lot of money, and some of the time when you do an investigative piece of journalism, you get to the end of the trail and what you thought might be there isn't there, and therefore, you know, you say, look, we don't have a program. And companies don't like that. But perhaps more important, Tom, and this goes to the core of it, investigative reporting at its best, quote, causes trouble, unquote, which is that you take on very powerful interests. In this program tonight on HCNet, companies such as Sequoia, ES&S, which is the largest voting machine manufacturer around, I think, Berquist, Pivot, I mean, these are large corporate interests. Now, when you do investigative reporting, by its very nature, you're bound to make somebody mad, make somebody uncomfortable, make somebody angry. And the decline of investigative journalism, and there has been a decline with few exceptions, that big corporations don't like trouble. And then beyond that, they especially don't like trouble in Washington, that something like 80% of our major media outlets are owned by no more than six or seven companies at most. And these companies are large international conglomerates. They have legislative and regulatory needs in Washington. And the kind of gutsy investigative reporting frequently is investigating people from whom these large corporations need favors. And that is another reason why you see less and less of really hard-nosed, play no favorites, kind of investigative reporting. that has gone out of favor for, among other reasons, the ones I've just listed.
It seems to me, Dan Rather, I remember back in the 70s and 80s when the joke in the business world, and I was in the business world at the time, was, you know, it's going to be a bad day when you wake up in the morning and there's a CBS film crew from 60 Minutes standing on your front doorstep. and there was a lot of truth to that. I mean, people used to be genuinely terrified of you guys. And then it seems like in the early 80s, Reagan stopped enforcing the Sherman Antitrust Act, and there was this mergers and acquisition mania that happened. And then in the mid-80s, in 87, he did away with the Fairness Doctrine. And one of the provisions of that was that television and radio stations have to program in the public interest. They had to provide public interest programming, which by and large was news. And so there was this firewall between the news department and the sales department. And then in 96, Clinton signed the Telecommunications Act, which further expanded that or did away with that, arguably, you know, the whole concept of programming in the public interest. So now what we have is infotainment on the cheap. Am I missing anything here?
Well, that's well stated, and that's pretty much what happened. The key phrase there is public service. For a long time, indeed, from the beginning of broadcasting in this country, that we believed in private ownership and private enterprise.
Sure.
But the contract, the compact with the public was, you, Mr. Private Enterprise person, you get to use the public airways, and in exchange for that, you commit to a certain amount of public service. We expect you to make a profit. We expect most of what you do to be aimed at making a profit. But at least a wee small part of what you do has to be dedicated to public service. And for a long time, for the better part of, I'll say, 70, 75 years, perhaps longer, is that right? Well, for a very long time, that's what we had. And at CBS, and this was true at NBC, and then later as ABC grew, this was the deal, that we're going to make money, and we're going to make it mostly out of our entertainment programs, but we're going to provide a public service, and most of that public service is going to be news. There were some religious programs allowed at the time. That is all gone. The concept of public service is now all gone, and that's the reason you find so much infotainment.
I think we need to reclaim it, but that's a whole other discussion. Dan Rather, thank you so much for being with us. HD.net for the information. Dan Rather reports. Dan, thank you very much.
Tom, thank you very much.
Great speaking with you, and for the many, many years of service to our country, I would say that you did. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're tuned in to the Tom Hartman Program. Fair and slightly unbalanced. This is Air America Radio.
And a quick reminder, this Friday, the 17th of August, I will be doing this show live from our affiliate K-Talk in Los Angeles, California. And that afternoon at 4:30 at the Landmark West Theater, there will be a screening of Leonardo DiCaprio's new movie, The 11th Hour. Actually, it's the opening. It's not a screening. And it's at 5. At 4:30, I'll be doing a Q&A just before that starts. And then I'm going to be, you know, hopping in a car and heading over to Hollywood. Hopping in a car. A few greenhouse gases, I guess. Anyway, heading over to Hollywood to the Arclight Theater in Los Angeles for a 6:30 question and answer before the 7 p.m. screening of Leonardo DiCaprio's new movie, The 11th Hour. And it should be very interesting. You can check out 11thhourfilm, 11thhourfilm.com for all the information on it. And also there's the whole schedule's over at tomhartman.com. Just click on our calendar and you can find the information. 35 minutes past the hour. Karl Rove leaving the White House. Of course, this was the big news yesterday. What boggled my mind was the coverage last night. Nobody was talking about the crimes of Karl Rove. At the closest anybody got to it was he involved or was he not involved in outing Valerie Plame? But in fact, I guess it should be small C crimes rather than large C crimes. But this is certainly bigger than Bill Clinton having sex with Monica Lewinsky, in my opinion. And that was apparently an impeachable crime, or at least, you know, lying about it. Not the, you know, Rove hasn't lied about these things. But Andrew Sullivan, the conservative, on his blog, is talking about how Rove is one of the worst political strategists in recent times, says Andrew Sullivan. He took a chance to realign the country. This was 9/11. I mean, this was this incredible moment of national unity. Franklin Roosevelt pulled the country together after Pearl Harbor. And here, George Bush had an opportunity to pull the country together, and Rove saw instead an opportunity to divide us one from another and to divide us from every other country in the world. Incredible damage done to us. So as Andrew Sullivan says, he took a chance to realign the country and to unite it in a war, threw it away to binge of hate-filled niche campaigning, polarization, and short-term expediency. This is a conservative talking about Karl Rove. His divisive politics and elevation of corrupt mediocrities to every branch of government has turned an entire generation off the conservative label, and rightly so, says Andrew Sullivan. It will take another generation to recover from the toxins Karl Rove has injected, with the president's eager approval into the political culture and into the conservative soul. This, you can track this all the way back to 1970. Alan Dixon, Democrat running for state treasurer in Illinois, and Karl Rove decides that Karl Rove comes in to help out Dixon's opponent, his Republican opponent. And suddenly 1,000 invitations on Dixon's campaign stationery appear in Chicago's red light district and in the soup kitchens, promising free beer, free food, girls, and a good time for nothing. And hundreds of the city's heavy drinkers and homeless, as the Guardian writes, this is from an article in the Guardian newspaper, hundreds of the city's heavy drinkers and homeless turned up at a Dixon reception looking for free booze. Crashed the thing. This is Rovian efforts. In the 1986 governor's race, a prime example, the contest between Rove's Republican client, Bill Clements, this is before he was working for George W. Bush, and the Democratic incumbent, Mark White, neck and neck. When Rove announced he had found an electronic listening device in his office and cried foul, the Republican suddenly won. And in fact, you know, the listening device had a battery in it that didn't last longer than Karl Rove had been in his own office. So that part's not in the Guardians and numerous other reports. 8 years later, Ann Richards is the governor, the Democratic governor of Texas. George W. Bush decides to take her on. And in the last days of this campaign, 1994, all of a sudden, voters all across Texas are getting calls from pollsters, in quotes, asking questions such as, quote, would you be more or less likely to vote for Governor Richards if you knew her staff is dominated by lesbians, end quote. Richards lost, Bush won. Same thing happened in South Carolina. John McCain whopped in the New Hampshire primary, whopped George W. Bush. South Carolina was where Bush had to pull the fat out of the fire, or whatever the metaphor you want to use is. And so what did he do? Push polling. You had people all across registered Republican voters who would vote in the Republican primary in South Carolina getting calls from pollsters asking questions like, if you knew, not saying that it's true, just asking the question in the abstract, if you knew that John McCain had been treated for mental illness as a consequence of his being a prisoner of war for 5 years, how would that affect your vote for him? Would you be more or less likely to vote for him? If you knew that John McCain had a child out of wedlock with an African-American woman, how would that change your willingness to vote for him? John and his wife have adopted a child from Bangladesh who has dark skin. That part wasn't in the push poll. If you knew that John McCain's wife had been treated for psychiatric disorder, how would that change your... And surprise, surprise, John McCain sinks in the polls. This is the last couple of days before the election, and Bush goes, you know, wins and goes on to become president. Rick Perlstein, writing over at the American Prospect, prospect.org, consider the robocalls. This is in the 2004 election. In the week before, and all, well, this happened actually in 2000, 2002, 2004, and 2006, right across the board. But speaking of this, oh, this is a 2006 election, excuse me. Consider the robocalls. In the week before the election, voters in at least 50 different races began receiving calls in which recorded voices said, "Hi, I'm calling with information about," insert Democratic candidate's name. The intention was obvious. Get people thinking they were receiving a call from the Democratic Party. So, you hang up on the robot, right? Like, I'm here in Portland, and my member of Congress is Darlene Hooley. I get a call that says, "Hi, I'm calling with information about Darlene Hooley." Well, she's the Democratic congresswoman. So I think, well, I'm already voting for her, so I hang up the phone. The robot calls back. "Hi, I'm calling with information about Darlene Hooley." Hang up the phone. "Hi," and it rings again. It rings a dozen times. It rings two dozen times. It's ringing through the middle of the night. Now, if you listen to the entire message, at the very end, you find that they're smearing the Democrat and then saying this call is from the Republican National Campaign Committee at the very end of a long, long call. But most people don't listen all the way to the end. They assume that it's from the Democratic candidate. As Rick Perlstein writes, in California's 50th district, where Democrat Francine Busby had hoped to win a rematch against incumbent Brian Bilrey in Republican felon Duke Cunningham's former seat, Busby staffers shut down their phone banks. They had, now this is the Democrat, she could not make phone calls to her own constituents or to, you know, to Democrat, registered Democratic voters because they were so furious about, "Hi, I'm calling with information about Francine Busby." Not realizing that those calls were coming from the Republican the National Republican Campaign Committee. They had to stop making their own calls. And she lost the race. Jim Gerlich in Pennsylvania's 6th District beat Lois Murphy, the Democrat. Lois Murphy, one of her campaigns, a spokesman for her campaign, she was the Democrat. She was her Democratic, registered Democratic voters were getting dozens of calls a day saying, "Hi, I'm calling with information about Lois Murphy, the Democrat." And people would hang up and the phone would ring again. They get 20, 30 calls. And he said, "Some of our biggest supporters have said, if you call me again, I'm not voting for Lois." And they had never called them. Now, Ed Patras of the NRCC, the National Republican Campaign Committee, says, "They check with their lawyers. We're not doing anything illegal. We're just drawing contrast between Democrats and Republicans." And why are people getting 10, 20, 30 phone calls? He says, "Oh, it must be some kind of glitch. It's a problem with the contractor." Well, the only downside of this is that they gave the contractor $2 million. As Rick Perlstein writes, some glitch. He also notes a California information guide for Democrats told voters to vote no on, this is at the top, the big headline, information guide for Democrats, right? Passed out in Democratic districts. And it says, vote no on these propositions. And they were all propositions backed by Democrats. Poll watchers, Rick Perlstein writes, brandishing handguns intimidated Latino voters in Arizona. Republican trick going back to 1962. When late Supreme Court Justice William Rehnquist was allegedly involved in such activities. In Virginia, the FBI is still investigating calls received by Democrats in the final days of the campaign, such as the following to a man registered to vote there since 1998. This is a message for Timothy Daly. This is the Virginia Elections Commission. We've determined you're registered to vote in New York. Therefore, you will not be allowed to cast your vote on Tuesday. If you do show up, you will be charged criminally. It was not a call from the Virginia Elections Commission. Nobody knows to this day who it was a call from. The FBI is supposed to be investigating this, but of course the FBI is ultimately under the control of Alberto Gonzalez. So, as Perlstein notes, cheating is now a constitutive part of the Republican culture. And why? Karl Rove. So from Dan Rather's investigation into the voting machines to Karl Rove's leaving, I mean, it is just all so incredibly sleazy. This Republican culture of corruption that has swept the country. It's tragic. It's truly tragic. And you have, you know, principal conservatives like Andrew Sullivan saying enough already. 45 minutes past the hour, 866-303-2270, our phone number.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, where despair is not an option. Get active. This is Air America Radio.
Ah, yes, Janice Lieberer there. Welcome back. 9 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman with you on Air America Radio, 866-303-2270, our telephone number, and Sharona in Los Angeles, California, listening on K-Talk. Hey, Sharona, what's up?
Hey, Tom. My name is Sharona, and I'm calling from Los Angeles. One, I want to say you're my dream stream. I have been streaming you since, like, 2000, and I met you when you were at the Budai Tree, I think in February of last year. My specific objective is to inform you and yourself of the Los Angeles National Impeachment Center. We call it LANIC, which is at www.pcimpeach.com. Due to our frustration with our Democratic leadership and not responding to the rank and file wish to have impeachment, we have gotten a storefront at 8124 West 3rd Street. We've gone to visit, a contingent of us has gone to visit Congressman Waxman. We were at Congressman Galaglia in Thousand Oaks, who's a Republican congressman that sits on the House Judiciary Committee. And we are actively working with a couple of members of the Los Angeles City Council.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely marvelous, Sharona. Sharona, let's just give out your website one more time, and then I've got to move along. But it's pcimpeach.com.
And we're doing this Friday. We're doing August 17th at 9:30 at Los Angeles City Hall. We're doing a peaceful presence that we would love to have everybody there.
Thank you very much. You're welcome. Thanks a lot for letting us know. James in New Paltz, New York. Hey, James, what's on your mind today?
Good afternoon, Tom. Quickly, I'm looking forward to seeing you at the Strand Bookstore. I understand you're going to be there in September sometime.
Yeah, I am. Okay. We're doing a book signing of my new book, Cracking the Code, The Art and Science of Political Persuasion, although it has a different subtitle now.
I'm very looking forward. Anyhow, quickly, I know we're not supposed to judge people by the sins of their parents or grandparents, but in Roe's case, it's very bizarre. I don't know if people know this. For example, his real name is not Roe. It's actually Rover. His grandfather was the governor the burgomaster of a town in Oldenburg and was a Nazi party official.
You know, James, I've gotten those spam emails, and I've tried to track that stuff down on the web, and I've never been able to confirm that.
Oh. Okay.
So, you know, I'm just not really sure if it's just a vanishing hitchhiker story or not. But I agree with you. We shouldn't judge people by their parents. We should judge Karl Rove by his actions, and his actions are pretty specific and pretty gruesome, frankly. And it's not just Karl Rove. I mean, you know, Rove, keep in mind, Rove was actually fired by Bush Sr. for doing this kind of stuff. He was hired by Bush Jr. for doing this kind of stuff. And the Republican Party has been cheering him on ever since. In fact, they even flipped the stars upside down on the elephant on their logo, in my opinion, to indicate that they no longer, you know, it's like flying the flag upside down, you know, distress signal. Or in the case of the Republicans, it's, you know, pushing it in our face. They're flipping the stars upside down on the GOP logo as a way of saying that they're not even Americans. They don't even believe in they care nothing about democracy in the United States. It's all about winning. It's all about power. Adrian in Los Angeles. Hey, Adrian.
Hello.
Hey, Adrian, you're on the air.
Hi, is this Tom?
It is. I am. You need to be listening to your telephone, not your radio.
I'm not on the radio. I'm on my cell phone.
Okay. What's up?
Tom, if this you, although it doesn't sound like you coming this way, I just want to say this. How is it that someone can do these things and create the kind of losses in elections that you spoke about? So I say that John McCain has a black child out of wedlock. Why is it that we as Americans find that so atrocious, first of all?
Well, that you're right. I mean, if America were a colorblind society, you know, absolutely. But the bottom line is that in South Carolina, you've got in the Republican base a lot of white racists, and this is who they were going after. This is Karl Rove was going to the white racists in South Carolina, and who are the Republican base or a part of the Republican base, and saying to them a lie. Right. And not asserting it as a fact. This is where, you know, it wasn't illegal what they were doing. It was simply immoral, saying if you knew that John McCain had a black child, had a child with an African-American woman out of wedlock, how would that change your vote? Well, if I knew that, that would change my or it wouldn't change my vote. Doesn't matter how people answered. They just wanted to get the meme out there. And you're absolutely right. we in America and, you know, shouldn't care. And in fact, we've had actually one president who was elected after a campaign was run against him that he had a child out of wedlock, and he was still elected. As I recall, it was Taft. I'd have to go back and look. But this worked. This was a Rove trick, apparently. Nobody knows. This was clearly a Bush campaign trick that worked in South Carolina. Alan in Beaverton, Oregon. Hey, Alan.
Hey, Tom.
Alan,
how you doing?
You're on the air. Good. What's up?
Hey, you know, what I wanted to comment on was this idea that the Republicans really didn't challenge as many elections as one might have thought in the 2006 election. And the idea is, I really believe that they did not challenge just because what they would have found out in their challenge, in the results of the challenge, is that they lost by more than they thought they did. Because
that's right.
All the things that they did to try and steal the election.
Yep.
Really,
we were saying the same thing on this program.
Overwhelming numbers.
Yeah, absolutely. I was saying the same thing on this program right after the election results were coming in 2006, and there was speculation about whether the Republicans would be challenging some of these close votes. And I said, you know, they won't, because if you do a serious investigation into what's happened, and particularly in some of these close votes, you're going to find Republican dirty tricks, Republican crimes, Republican felonies that are mind-boggling. Coming up next, Max Blumenthal of The Nation stopping by in his article, Kill or Convert, brought to you by the Pentagon. 57 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program. Viagra for your brain. On Air America Radio. To the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio.
Oh, this is interesting. Looks like the White House's Office of Faith-Based and Community Initiatives has been sending your tax dollars to Love Demonstrated Ministries, the evangelical S&M youth camp, where a counselor dragged an allegedly lackadaisical teenage girl from a truck. This from Max Blumenthal's website, maxblumenthal.com. Max has been doing some just absolutely great reporting, keeping track of what's going on with the Christian Reich. And speaking as a Christian, I have to say many Christians are absolutely horrified by the Christian Reich. He writes for The Nation, Nation Magazine, thenation.com, Puffin Foundation Writing Fellow at The Nation Institute based in New York City. His work has also appeared in Salon, The American Prospect, Washington Monthly, HuffingtonPost.com, and all summarized over at MaxBlumenthal.com. Max, welcome to the program.
Yeah, great to be here.
Kill or Convert, brought to you by the Pentagon, your most recent headline. And you start this story with Stephen Baldwin, but it's really about Operation Straight Up. Tell us about both.
Operation Straight Up is known as OSU. It's sort of the USO backwards, and it does exactly what the USO does on the surface, which is bring entertainment to the troops. It has, like, the Flying Willendas, the boxer Evander Holyfield, the actor Stephen Baldwin, a ventriloquist, comedians, people who do, you know, tricks with basketballs, and they bring them over to Iraq and to military installations across the U.S. to entertain the troops with the endorsement of the Pentagon. It's part of the America Supports You program, which is a taxpayer-funded program to boost the troops' morale. And so on the surface, it seems just kind of like any other good old-fashioned pro-troops organizations. But sort of when you start looking behind the surface and look at just for instance, the website of OSU, you'll see that it actually has a hidden sectarian agenda, which is to convert the troops to evangelical Christianity by you know, hellfire and brimstone premillennialist rhetoric. So you know, on the What We Believe section of the OSU website, they say, you know, we believe the non-believers, the non-born-again Christians, will be cast into a lake of fire for everlasting to suffer everlasting torment. Not only that, they distribute care packages to the troops and are sending them to troops stationed in Iraq.
They're actually mailing these things to our troops.
They're mailing them to our troops, and they contain you know, white socks and baby wipes and lots of anodyne things like that. They also contain Left Behind Eternal Forces, the Killer Convert video game, which, you know, the object of which is to kill or convert as many non-believers as possible in a post-apocalyptic landscape that looks a lot like post-9/11 New York. So after a hard day of house-to-house searches and counterinsurgency warfare, U.S. troops can come back to the barracks and play kill or convert, kill the infidels, which is not a very healthy exercise considering the high rate of PTSD going on in Iraq. They're also given conversion tools that are double-printed in Arabic so they can proselytize not only among U.S. troops but among Iraqi civilians as well. And Stephen Baldwin and the director of OSU, Jonathan Spinks, the former kickboxing champion, are traveling to Iraq very soon. They may be there now to meet with U.S. troops and entertain them and proselytize them in an endeavor that's openly called on the OSU website, a military crusade in Iraq. I mean, we all know the consequences Bush faced for saying after 9/11 that the U.S. was going to wage a crusade. But this only lends to the perception in Muslim nations that the U.S. occupation is actually an effort to Christianize these countries from the barrel of a rifle. And that's actually what OSU and its directors believe.
Yeah, they actually, and what they're, frankly, what they're trying to do. We're talking about Max Blumenthal. MaxBlumenthal.com, his website, also over at TheNation.com. And, Max, this is a perfect segue, I think, into a previous piece that you wrote, Rapture Ready, the Unauthorized Christians United for Israel Tour. And this was pretty shocking. Back on July 16th, you went to the Washington-Israel Summit, sponsored by Christians United for Israel, and learned that this is a group that is united for Israel in a particularly strange way, shall we say.
Yeah, this was a video I did about Christians United for Israel and their annual conference in Washington. And essentially what I did was just interview participants in this conference. About 4,000 people showed up to lobby on Capitol Hill for a military strike on Iran and for expansion of Israeli military Israeli territory, and for refusal of any kind of humanitarian aid to the Palestinians, and just other draconian, insane, and apocalyptic measures in the Middle East. They are directed by Pastor John Hagee, a megachurch pastor in San Antonio, Texas. And, you know, some of the biggest megachurch pastors in the country are members of this organization, are members of his board, and he, his organization includes people like Tom DeLay and Gary Bauer. So I just went around this conference asking people, why do they support Israel? And to a man, they told me that they support Israel because that's where the Messiah is going to come back. And you know, there are certain conditions for the Messiah to return. There has to be an apocalyptic battle between the U.S., Israel, and some of the countries that are in the axis of evil. And that in the end, all the non-believers are going to be thrown in a lake of fire. That includes the Jews of Israel. And if the Jews don't convert, they are going to suffer everlasting torment. So their agenda is actually anti-Semitic, although they claim to support Israel. At the same time, I was able to reveal or show the disparity between Hagee and the members of his organization, who told me honestly why they support Israel. Because the directors of this organization had meetings beforehand and decided that they should conceal the fact that their motivation for supporting Israel is the end times and eschatology. So they essentially lied on camera while the rest of the organization told me it's all about the end times, including Tom DeLay, who I interview at the beginning of my video. I interview Tom DeLay and I say, you know, why do you support Israel? And he says, of course, I support it because of the second coming and the rapture. I hope the rapture comes tomorrow. And I support Israel in order to hasten the rapture.
Right, and in this theology, that means the death or the conversion of all the Jews in Israel.
Right, and first there needs to be, you know, the Battle of Gog and Magog, and Magog is embodied by Iran and Russia and all these other nations that they've, you know, they've extrapolated this battle out of the Bible.
This is actually, in the opinion of many, a very bizarre reading and a very selective reading of mostly Daniel, Isaiah, and parts of Revelation.
It's strange stuff. A powerful lobby. They're lobbying Congress. And people like Joseph Lieberman are showing up to this conference comparing Hagee to Moses, and they're lobbying Congress for this battle. In other words,
why would anybody who's Jewish in the United States, or why would anybody who, for that matter, even more importantly, who's Jewish in Israel, be supporting a group that is pretty openly saying that all the Jews in Israel should either die or be converted to Christianity? Why do these guys have such a loud voice? Why are they so powerful within, for example, the Republican Party?
Right. Well, Israel, and by extension Joseph Lieberman, who seems to see U.S. interests and Israel's as the same, thinks that cultivating this crowd, which encapsulates millions of Americans as supporters, is the right thing to do because they feel like they're desperate, and they've always cultivated support from controversial demographics.
So are you saying, Max Blumenthal, that Joe Lieberman or Jews in America or in Israel, for that matter, Israelis who are supporting Christians United for Israel, this group that is whose members believe, including Tom DeLay, that the Jews of Israel have to be killed or converted, that they're basically useful idiots because they don't agree with their theology, but let's use them anyway if they're going to give us money and support?
They'll give them money and they'll lobby against any, peace negotiations with the Palestinians or any, withdrawal of settlements from the West Bank because Israel, in fact, is Israel's right-wing government doesn't want that. And so their interests in the short term are the same as this group. And, from a moral standpoint, maybe these people are actually anti-Semitic and they believe in, the end times, but so what? I mean, for Israel, what this really is a relationship of mutual exploitation.
And then there's the same mentality now in Operation Straight Up, where these guys are going over to Iraq. I mean, it's just it's mind-boggling. You can read all about it over at maxblumenthal.com. The links to all of Max's work, his videos, his writing. Max, thanks for the great investigative reporting you've been doing.
Thanks for having me on.
Sure. Good talking with you. 16 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you on Air America.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, where despair is not an option. Get active. This is Air America Radio.
Minutes past the hour. By the way, if you're trying to track down, on Friday I'll be at two different openings of Leonardo DiCaprio's movie The 11th Hour, doing a Q&A before each one in Los Angeles. On Monday, we'll be in New York City doing the same on Monday and Tuesday. And on Friday of next week in San Francisco. And if you'd like the details along with the names of the theater and phone numbers and times and all that kind of stuff, if you go over to TomHartman.com and just click on Tom's schedule, you'll find it all right there. It's including links, hyperlinks to the theater and whatnot. And up at the top of the page at TomHartman.com, you'll find a
a video of the movie. Marcus in Orange County, California. Welcome to the program. Hey, Marcus.
Yeah, good morning, Tom. I wanted to tell you, expanding upon what you were discussing about John Hagee, I was in the Air Force, and I went through Lackland Air Force Base for basic and tech school in San Antonio, so I knew about him.
And how long ago was this?
Yeah, about John Hagee. But in I got out in 1980. I have friends of mine whose sons are now currently in the Air Force who went through basic and for the last 3 or 4 years. I talked to about 6 or 7 of these kids, and they said that they were given flyers on Air Force bases about going to his church. When they would go to the church, especially during the beginning of the war with Iraq, they would stand up in uniform and they would put, you know, they would acknowledge them and they would applaud them. And they were told by members of his church that this was a holy war, that the United States military must engage the Arab world, and that Israel and the United States are destined to fight the Arab world in Armageddon. And they were told that the liberal element in this country and the Islamic movement in this country would be part of the war front as well as the one overseas. It would be domestic and foreign, and they were obligated to fight in this war. Now, I want to tell you, as a man that's half American Indian, whose father went through the Grapes of Wrath, was a police chief, who I've served in the Air Force. I love this country. I believe in this country. This scares the living hell out of me. This is not the country I was born in. These people have created something which Chris Hedges talks about, an American fascist, these dominionists, and I know you've read the book.
Yes.
And this is something that's Orwellian, it's un-American, and these people like...
It's un-Christian, too, by the way.
It's sick.
Yeah, and I would say it's un-Christian as well.
Absolutely. This is Jesus Christ, nowhere in the New Testament, implored people to raise arms. He never told people to kill. There were two main commandments of the Bible. Love the Lord with all your heart and love your fellow man. Where this is coming from, I don't know.
Well, there actually is one quote from him in the Bible where he says, I came with a sword. And
right.
And that's that one little sentence gets pulled out of, you know, gets pulled out and thrown out over and over and over again. It's so wrong. It's just so wrong.
Tom, not only that, I've had 3 girlfriends who are from Israel, and they told me the overwhelming majority of people in Israel think these people are nuts. They're crazy. And one of my last girlfriend, Mina, who actually served in the Israeli army, you know, she was mandated to at 18 to 20, she told me that all her commanders and all the people that she was in the military with thought these people were off their rocker. And, you know, it reminds me, in the mid-18th century, I have a degree in political science, and there were these groups that were popped up, all these religious fundamentalists that were popping up all over the country, the Shakers, Joseph Smith, et cetera. And each one, you know, said that they were endowed by God and they were going to carry this fight. And if you even take the rapture wasn't taught by the church. It was a group of cultists that started this in 1850 in England. And now this is spread over here like wildfire.
Yeah, the whole idea of the rapture did not precede the 19th century. It didn't essentially exist before that time. And a lot of religions were founded in that during, oddly enough, the progressive and populist era. And I would say it was because the economic conditions in this country were so terrible as a result of the rise of the robber barons. People were just desperate for anything, and they were turning to religion. And you had, like, Ellen White leading all her followers up onto a mountaintop, literally on a particular day, saying, this is it. This is the end of the world. And, you know, when the end of the world didn't happen, she reinvented that and successfully, and that became the Seventh-day Adventist Church. But there's a number of religions that began around that time around those ideas. And it's almost like we're back there again. The more poverty that can be inflicted on Americans, the more likely they are to turn to these hyper-fundamentalist incarnations of what calls itself Christianity, and I just don't find Christ in this kind of Christianity. I'm sorry.
And not only that, but I'm a student of the Civil War, and my father was from Oklahoma, and my grandfather was from Paducah, Kentucky, and I want to tell you that when there was the war ended, and you had the carpetbaggers come in the South, and then, and the war, this created this element, especially in the Deep South, which now permeates our country.
Yeah, well said, Marcus. Marcus, I got to run, but thank you for
the
call. I appreciate it. 27 minutes past. Absolutely right. Poverty just is... The consequences of poverty are terrible. Bob Herbert, actually, writing about this in the New York Times today. I'll tell you about that right after this. We'll take your calls. 27 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
Four minutes past the hour. Boy, you know, there's some strange stuff going on out there. Some of it is downright crazy. Downright crazy. Like 10 sheriff's deputies. This is just a little north of us here in Portland, Oregon, in southern Washington State. 10 sheriff's deputies had to spend the night in the wilderness. Why? They got disoriented. What were they doing out there in the wilderness that caused them to get so disoriented that search and rescue crews had to go in the next day and find these 10 stranded sheriff's deputies? In fact, apparently so dehydrated and exhausted they could not move on their own, three of the deputies. Well, what they were doing was part of the program over the past week and a half, having seized nearly 80,000 marijuana plants. Something fishy going on here. They're out there taking down the pot plants, and suddenly they can't find their way out of the woods. Yeah. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Kevin in Dearborn, Michigan. Hey, Kevin, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. I've been listening for a while, and I really like your show. This is
Thank you. Cool
that you guys let me on today. I've been trying for a while. And I'm just really concerned about these people with passing out leaflets and that kind of stuff to our soldiers and stuff. That just puts these troops, they're already in the strain of combat. I mean, look what's going through their mind. Now they got another thing to handle on. This is not right.
And you've got the youngest of the Baldwin brothers who made a name for himself standing out in front of X-rated movie stores and bookstores in Los Angeles, taking photographs of license plates and, openly evangelizing people. This guy now going over to Iraq. It's like, wait a minute. Aren't our soldiers dealing with enough without being evangelized? A and B, doesn't this violate the prohibition between right in the Constitution that there shall be no official state religion and that the state shall not promote a religion, essentially? I mean, this evangelism in the military is, frankly, in my opinion, I agree with you, Kevin, scary stuff. Like you said, these guys are under a lot of stress, and they really don't need this. Ray in Teaneck, New Jersey. Hey, Ray, welcome to the program.
Doing, Tom? I just want to say, first of all, you are just such an amazingly breath of fresh air. You just, the way that you speak with others that oppose our opinions, it's just right on. I just wanted to say that. I've been thinking that for such a long time. I do want to get a couple points across, if I could, and I'll start right away. One of the things that I wanted to suggest that I think that I've heard a lot of things about what you're saying and a lot of topics that are happening today. So much of this has been put together in such an amazing movie that I just saw this weekend and literally freaked me out just amazingly. And you might have already seen it. It's called Zeitgeist.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Zeitgeist.
Yeah, I have, yeah.
I don't know what you're
the first third about. Of it is about the origin of Christianity. And it's as far as I know, it's the first third of it is historically accurate. The second third of it is largely speculative. And the third third of it contains some actual inaccuracies. But the first third about religion,
it was
most religions grew out of something that preceded them. I mean, that's so.
Anyway, the comment that I did want to make, I mean, that was just something that I just suggest if anyone gets it, zeitgeist.com or zeitgeisttheMovie.com or something.
Whatever. If you Google it, you can find it. Yeah.
Yeah, Google it and check it out. Here's the other thing I wanted to say, and I've had innumerous amounts of debates with different people, I'd say a lot of born-again Christians, that my point is, like, you know, if you're really behind this guy and you're really behind the war, then, you know, support it, man. I don't. So I'm at all the rallies. I'm doing what I can to not support it. And if you support it, then it's your right. Go ahead and support it. When we really get down to facts, and this happened with a doctor of mine, a doctor who was caring for me for a while. We finally started talking about politics and found out which side of the fence he was on. I should have known. There's about six Bibles sitting in the waiting room. And as we were talking about things, it came up to the last election. I said, listen, we've talked about this stuff for a long time. I've debated with you innumerous amounts of times, and you've always failed to come up with facts. So I'm just going to say this. I think you're a smart guy. You're a smart doctor. Do yourself a favor. I want you to watch this movie. I think it was one of Greenwald's movies. And I said, just watch it, you know. I just think you should be educated. And he said, well, you got to read the Bible. And I said, you know what? I said, in reality and fairness and what this country was supposedly built on, I don't have to read it because it's not what, you know, the Constitution is based on. But I'll tell you what, the DVD's 2 hours. I'll read 2 hours of the Bible. Needless to say, I came back. He didn't watch the movie. I read the Bible. And I listed a ton of things that were completely conflicting with everything that's gone on with this administration.
Yeah, spot on, Ray. Let me first of all say, as somebody who...
Just say this, man. This is my point. Yeah. What I had said to him was... all these things, and he was just down. There's nothing he could do. And he just looked at me square on, and this had happened with some others, and they look straight up and they go, have you ever heard of the Revelations? Do you know what the rapture is? And that's where it ended.
Yeah, because they've been reading these guys who are absolutely taking stuff out of context and twisting it and turning it around. You know, speaking as somebody, I think there's probably at least six Bibles in my house, and I've actually read the Old and New Testament, as it's referred to as by Christians, all the way through four times, and it made me a liberal. It made me a liberal. Jesus was the original liberal. Warren, and thanks a lot for the call, Ray. Warren in Eugene, Oregon. Hey, Warren.
Hi, Tom. It's unfortunate that just like the Bush administration is making things worse for the Republican Party, more so than a Democrat could. The far-right Christians are doing the same kind of immeasurable damage to the Christian religion by these people who promote hatred, bigotry, intolerance, you know. And it's one thing to be all for war or the exclusion of somebody or whatever, but to do so in the name of Jesus of Nazareth is an absolute outrage.
Yeah. I absolutely agree with you, Jim. Very, very well said. Thank you. Warren. Jim in New York City. Hey, Jim.
Hi, how are you? Thanks, Tom, for taking the call. I just wanted to mention a website for people on this subject about the fundamental movement in the military, which is obviously extremely dangerous. It's and you can see some video as well. It's called the Military Religious Freedom Foundation.org. You may know about it, and Mickey Weinstein runs it.
Oh, yeah. Mickey's been a guest on this program a number of times.
Yeah, he's really on with this, and he has history of his own personal abuse in the military.
Sure. Well, and his son's going through the Air Force Academy, and he's engaged in a lawsuit right now against the Bush administration.
Oh, okay. Well,
Mikey Weinstein is how his name is said. But in any case, continue.
Oh, okay. A different pronunciation I made. But, I emailed him and became part of this. I'm really very concerned, like everyone else who called in, because obviously religion should not be in the forefront of military action. Otherwise, it's a crusade.
Yeah, it's a crusade, and it's a disaster. It's a political disaster. It's a public relations disaster. You want the Muslim world to hate you, tell them that you're engaging in military action, dropping bombs on people, killing people for religious purposes. And all of a sudden, the charge that we have been making since 9/11, that Osama bin Laden, assuming that he's actually the guy behind 9/11, that Osama bin Laden or, you know, Muslim fundamentalists flying airplanes into buildings for religious purposes, killing innocent civilians for religious purposes, is wrong. We're making that argument. And then they look around and they say, wait a minute, there's, according to the Lancet, according to the British Medical Journal, 600,000 dead Iraqi civilians. And you guys are doing it for religion? Maybe we need to rethink this. And that's the road that they go down, and it's tragic. Rachel in Los Angeles, listening on K Talk. Hey, Rachel.
Oh, hey, Tom. Yeah, listen. This is in response to you know what you were saying, that the fundamentalists always quote, "I came not to send peace, but a sword."
Right.
They don't read the whole bit. That's just the lead into what comes after. Okay, can I just read it? It'll just take a...
Sure.
Whosoever shall deny me before men, him will I also deny before my Father which is in heaven. Think not that I am come to send peace on earth. I came not to send peace, but a sword. For I am come to set a man at variance against his father, and the daughter against her mother, and the daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. The point being that people at that time just had a very radical, you know, message. You kind of had to stand up to your parents or whatever and say no.
What he was saying is he had come to shake up what he viewed as a Judaism that had become corrupted. He was not coming to declare that one nation should declare war against another nation.
But he had nothing to do with war, right.
That's right. He was very clearly, and this is the context of much of those conversations in the New Testament, Jesus was very clearly talking about the religion into which he was born and of which he was a part. And it was Paul who came along and who was probably born Roman, not Jewish, and converted, who came along and said, oh, no, we need to take this to the Greeks. We need to take this to everybody else. And, yeah, good point. Rachel, thank you very much for the call. And finally, Dick, we've got to take a break here in a minute. But, Dick, in Seattle, you want to take me to task for being nice to Dan Rather.
Well, yeah, I thought you were kind of generous there, given his real track record at CBS as a senior editor there and before that as a reporter. I mean, this guy was, of course, one of the top cheerleaders for the Bush War of Aggression in Iraq, but more significantly, you know, as the only TV reporter to view the Zapruder film of the Kennedy assassination in Dallas before it was bought and hidden away by Henry Luce and the CIA agent, senior editor at Time Magazine, C.D. Jackson, Rather lied about it, saying Kennedy was knocked violently forward from a shot from behind, which we didn't know was false until 15 years later when a stolen copy was shown on Geraldo Rivera's show. And remember, his boss, CBS founder William Paley, was an establishment operative who spent millions on phony investigations on documentaries covering up the murder of our last good president.
Yeah, okay, got it, Dick. And yeah, nobody's perfect. Nobody's perfect. But I'll tell you, Dan Rather did a hell of a lot of very good investigative journalism for a lot of decades. While, you know, the rest of us were out there, many of us not doing quite that same kind of work. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Talk radio for the rest of us. This is Air America Radio.
As a young man, I found politics in the Bush's arm I dove. And I got real good at dirty tricks. My name, sir, is Karl Rove. Oh, Dick Cheney, don't you cry for me. Cause when your administration's gone, the right will kiss my knee. Well, I raised the right and squashed the left. The stars and bars you fly. Oh, excuse me, make that stars and stripes, the time how it speeds by. Oh, Dick Cheney, don't you cry for me, cause when your administration's gone, the right will kiss my knee.
You don't know the power of the dark side.
Ah, Dick Cheney, get back. 9 minutes before the hour. Bob Herbert today, writing in the New York Times, and this may seem like it's a whole different topic in a whole different arena, but I would submit to you this is the same thing. Bob Herbert's article, 100,000 Gone Since 2001, and he starts talking about the murder of these three kids in Newark. He says it's been almost 6 years since the attack of September 11, 2001, when the nation's consciousness of terror was yanked to new heights. In those 6 years, nearly 100,000 people, an incredible number, have been murdered in the United States. And he goes on to talk about this horrible problem of murder in the United States, particularly, he says, robberies involving juveniles, little regard for the lives of their victims are becoming more prevalent. Individuals with cell phones, iPods, and other electronic devices are particular targets. And I would submit to you that this is a symptom of poverty in the United States, as is toxic fundamentalism. And the best program, the best solution for toxic fundamentalism, keep in mind probably the low point of toxic fundamentalism in the United States was the 50s, 60s, 70s, and the first couple of years of the 80s. Because it was the high point of the American middle class. The best solution for the murder problem, the best solution for toxic fundamentalism, good jobs. A good job is the best anti-poverty program there is. Jeffrey in Kentucky. Hey, Jeffrey, welcome to the program.
How you doing, sir?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up?
I want to add a quote before I get into what I say what I was going to talk to you about. When I started college 2 years ago, one of my professors told me the cure for education breeds liberalism. So I guess that goes hand in hand with what you were talking about with poverty.
Yeah.
But I was stationed in Iraq in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
Medical thing. That Christmas, we started receiving Christmas cards from certain church groups. I can't remember their name, but they were actually congratulating us and thanking us for bringing the Crusades back to the Holy Land, so to speak.
Which you're kidding. I mean, I could see, you know, sending troops a Christmas card and saying, you know, God bless you, you know, thanks for joining us, serving our country, that kind of thing. But, you know, thank you for bringing the Crusade to the Holy Land?
I know. That's what threw me for a loop. And then on top of that, when I joined the Army in 98, I was told, since I'm a practicing pagan, I was told I wasn't allowed to practice my religion in the military by a chaplain. And it took us 9 years just to get the VA to recognize a marker for us.
Right, for the tombstones. I was going to say that. I believe that has changed now.
Oh, yeah. We just won the case on that. But truthout.org just came out with a documentary, but had a documentary over Samara in 2004 about the Black Cross incident. And what I think it was, I heard by ear, I didn't see it by hand, is that there was frustrated, disgruntled troops going into mosques and spray painting holy items with black crosses, which kind of denigrates the whole meaning of Christianity in the first place. But
I just thought I'd chime in
on that.
Yeah, in your experience in Iraq, did you have the experience of troops defacing Muslim holy sites with Christian symbols?
We got the basically don't get caught doing it or don't do it briefing from our commander saying, hey, this is what's been going on in other sectors. If we catch you do it, we're going to burn you. So
good. Good. So you didn't see it? And
no, I didn't see it firsthand, but I did see we did get the briefing over it, so evidently it was happening somewhere.
That there had been some consequences of it. Jeffrey, thanks a lot for the heads up for the call. Good to hear from you. Mustafa in Dearborn, Michigan. Hey, Mustafa.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
Good. What's up?
Especially what the gentleman before me just said, it's funny that to hear the president say the word crusade, especially in a continent where the people still remember the Crusades. I've been told that I'm a Muslim, and I've been told that people, you know, from my culture don't really forget that often, and believe me, my mother knows that. But the fact is that people still tell stories about the Crusades back there, and to say the word and to imply that, especially to have groups around here doing that. I have friends in the military, Muslim friends, and they got those cards, exactly what he's saying, and it's very disturbing. Mm. Not right, too.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And this, in my opinion, is a cancer which is infecting our military and our nation.
It's not even that. Imagine some renegade general might try this even at home. He might go into an area. Who knows what he could do? People who get infected by fundamentalism, by radicalism, are the most dangerous at all because they don't see compromise.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've seen this in different cultures.
That's right. On the Islamic side, you see that infection with Osama bin Laden. On the Christian side, you see that infection with Tim McVeigh in Oklahoma City.
Exactly.
I mean, it's two sides of the same coin. And that coin is radical fundamentalism. And it's radical fundamentalism that believes that the ends justify the means, that lies are okay, that killing innocent civilians is appropriate because it's going to bring about a greater good, and on it goes like that. And it is frankly, in my opinion, a violation of the foundational tenets of Judaism, Islam, Christianity, and obviously Hinduism and Buddhism. I mean, as far as I know, no war has ever been fought in the name of Buddhism. But
if you look at anything, you're right. Jobs will erase it. If you took half these outside contractors out of Iraq, like the workers, the builders, you gave those jobs to Iraqis, guaranteed 80%. Maybe even 99% of those attacks will go down. You'll be able to weed out fundamentalists and exterminate them. Fundamentalism is not taking out by a broad sword.
That's absolutely right. And that's why Hamas and Fatah have had the success that they've had is because they come in with jobs programs and with hospitals and with schools and they help people, financially. And why can't we learn from that? Well, we used to do that. I guess that's just a liberal thing to do. I don't know. But it's... you would think that when you drop bombs on people, they don't like it. 57 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program, where smart people get their news. This is Air America Radio. Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
Welcome back. 6 minutes past the hour on this day in history. What is today? It's the 14th of August. There we go. On this day in history, in 1935, Franklin Roosevelt signed the Social Security Act, providing for about a third of the recipients of Social Security. About a third of them are disabled, severely disabled people, literally widows, orphans, and the severely disabled, who it's a safety net through which they will not fall. And for the other two-thirds of recipients of Social Security, a defined benefits or fixed benefits pension, essentially, thus reducing the horrible problem that we had during the Great Depression of the leading causes of death among the elderly being hypothermia in the winter and malnutrition and illness-related diseases in the summer as a consequence of poverty. Basically, poverty was the leading cause of death among the elderly in the 1930s during the Great Depression. And the Social Security Act solved that to a large extent. Why can't we do the same thing with health care? And what's the direction we're going with health care? Mark Meaney's with us. He's the president and CEO of the National Institute for Patients' Rights and the author and the website Empower Patients. .com, P-A-T-I-E-N-T-S, empowerpatients.com. And he's also the author of a book, Three Secrets Hospitals Don't Want You to Know, How to Empower Patients. Mark Meaney, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
You were the one guy when Sanjay Gupta did his, what I would call a hit piece on Michael Moore, you were the one guy that he interviewed who was speaking in defense of Michael Moore's movie Sicko. And in your news release, you're out here saying that you want to go beyond Michael Moore. How is that possible?
Well, we feel, and we felt at that time, Tom, we still feel, that the only possible authentic criticism of Michael Moore's Sicko is that the movie doesn't go far enough from a patient rights perspective. Now, Michael's not to be blamed for this. He simply doesn't have the experience in the delivery of health care at the hospital bedside. However, we feel he could have used his insights into systemic problems to drill down to the hospital bedside in exposing another crisis other than access. And, in fact, the majority of Americans experience this crisis, face this crisis, in the delivery of health care at the hospital bedside.
So what is the crisis and how do we solve it?
Well, the crisis basically is, it's kind of a perfect storm between reimbursement and standard of care. The standard of care is what's called component management, which basically means a doctor for every organ. Now, this leads to fragmentation of care.
About basically specialties. You're talking about, you've got the heart surgeon, and then you've got the internist who's working on the liver or the gut or whatever, and then you've got the orthopedist who's fixing your, is that what you're talking about?
That's precisely right. And reimbursement feeds into this, but this is the standard of care. If you have complications, you will have a doctor for every organ. Now, this leads to a lack of coordination. Those doctors don't communicate well with one another, Tom.
On the other hand, I don't want a guy who's a podiatrist doing brain surgery on me.
Well, that's right. We want specialists, Tom. That's exactly right. We want people to focus on the heart.
So what am I missing here?
Yes.
What am I missing? You're saying, it sounds like you're saying, having a lot of specialists is a bad thing, and yet at the same time, you're saying, but on the other hand, we do want people to specialize in particular areas of medicine.
We would want them to coordinate their care of a particular case, a patient. They don't communicate well with one another. They don't confer on patient care. And as a consequence, they don't coordinate their activities in the care of particular patients. And so patients and their families are left struggling on their own to try to integrate their own care by piecing together bits of information from different specialists and subspecialists in an attempt to get a complete picture of what's going on. with their
right. And at the same time, to make it even worse, you've got an insurance company sending you a bill saying, if you don't confirm to us within 30 days that you actually got these services from this internist, we are not going to pay the bill. If you don't confirm to us within 30 days that you actually got this service from this brain surgeon, we're not going to pay that bill. If you don't confirm, you know, all this nonsense that the insurance companies are sending out to try to get people to, you know, ignore or miss a letter or whatever in the mail, and all of a sudden, you know, you're not covered or something. I mean, it's absolutely bizarre.
Well, it is. I mean, patients and their families should be prepared to be able to identify when there's a problem communication between doctors, because then it will spill over to between doctors and patients and their families, and be prepared with a strategy on how to solve that problem.
And what's that strategy?
Well, the strategy is, you know, a lot of people say educate, educate, educate. We're all for education, but that's pretty hard to do when you're flat on your back and intimidated given the environment. So what we advise, Tom, we take a different approach. We advise people to build a network of relationships with key hospital personnel who will then go between doctors, nurses, patients, and their families in serving as intermediaries.
Well, I can tell you, we're talking with Mark Meany at EmpowerPatients.com. I can tell you from my own experience when my father was diagnosed with a terminal cancer,
yeah,
and trying to deal with the people at the hospital, and there were all these secondary things that were happening that they couldn't figure out.
Yeah.
And I had some knowledge of, because I knew his medical history better than any of them did,
yeah,
and share his genetic history, and you know, trying to talk to doctors and saying, well, do you think that this might be the result of that, you know, this, that sort of thing. You get dismissed, you get ignored, you get the response of, I'm sorry, you know, I'm not paid to talk to you, you're not the patient. The patient is stoned on morphine and incapable of having the conversation.
Precisely.
Wouldn't it be better to have a single-payer healthcare system where the focus of the healthcare system, the goal of the healthcare system, is on providing patient services rather than on showing a profit?
Well, we want to focus right now on the present current conditions and what patients can do given these conditions. And as you say, Tom, a failure to communicate leads to conflict and ultimately to medical error. So patients and their family must be prepared with three different strategies to clear up problems of communication, mediate and resolve conflict, and avoid and hopefully deal with medical errors. And you do it by building a network of relationships with key hospital personnel. Let me give you an example here, Tom. One would be, it should anchor, this person should anchor your network, and it's the hospital chaplain. People say, the chaplain? What are you doing? I'm not dying. The fact of the matter is they spend only about 25% of their time ministering to spiritual values at the end of life. The majority of their time, they're putting out fires. They're helping people clear up problems of communication, mediate and resolve conflict, avoid or deal with medical error. Anchor your network with a hospital chaplain.
That's amazing. I never would have even thought of that.
They will then direct you to both clinical and non-clinical personnel who will come to your bedside free of charge, by the way, because they haven't figured out a way to charge for hospital chaplains yet. But the chaplain will direct you to those you will need to clear up the problems of communication, mediate and resolve conflict, and avoid or deal with medical error.
Amazing. And in the meantime, how do we bring about fundamental transformation in our healthcare delivery system? Or is that just an area that's outside the realm of what you're working with over at EmpowerPatients.com?
Well, we certainly deal at the policy level, but our main focus is on helping patients and their families today deal with this crisis at the hospital bedside. And that's why we advise, you know, there's something in the hospital called a case manager. Most people have never even heard of a case manager. That person is the person who coordinates the efforts of different specialists and subspecialists. The chaplain probably has a great relationship with that person. Bring that person to your hospital bedside. If you have a conflict, every accredited hospital has an ethics committee and three people who are always on call to help you mediate and resolve conflict from the ethics committee. You simply pick up the hospital phone, dial the hospital operator, ask that somebody from the ethics committee be paged, and they will come, again, free of charge. They'll save you time, they'll save you money, but most important, they will help you mediate and resolve conflict with your doctors and nurses.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like some information that would be really useful whether we have single-payer health care or not, however it works.
You know, if even when we solve the economic problems, you're exactly right, Tom. We will still be left with this problem of fragmentation of care, lack of coordination, breakdown in communication.
Do other countries do it like this, Mark Maney?
Yes. Excuse me?
Is the healthcare systems of other countries, are they as fragmented as in the United States?
That's a good point, Tom. I think that when you are on salary, say you take, for example, the Mayo Clinic. Everybody's on salary there. There's no impediment to them coordinating their efforts. So you get some of the most coordinated care at the Mayo Clinic. Well,
which is sort of identical to the way it is in England, where everybody works for the government and everybody's on a salary and, you know, and they're paid well.
That's exactly it. There's no impediment to coordination.
Right. Another good argument for single-payer health care or some variation thereof. Dr. Mark Maney, his name, the website empowerpatients.com, and you can learn all about it over at the website. Mark Maney, thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much, Tom.
Good talking with you. 16 minutes past the hour at the Tom Hartman Program. Right here on Air America Radio. Stick around.
Truth in broadcasting. This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
Out in Taiwan, my gallbladder out in Greece. Took a side trip up to Sweden to fill some caverns in my teeth. Saw a doctor down in Denmark and a specialist in Spain to see what could be causing me this dull but steady pain. Took a trip up to Toronto just to buy some little pills. Thought I'd died and gone to heaven when they handed me the bill. Went to Norway when I noticed that my eardrum had a hole. Got back home just in time to watch the Super Bowl. It's been a brutal year, but man, I'm glad I was overseas, where you can see the doctor when you really got a need. Where people, they live longer, babies also like they should. I guess they call it healthcare, and I guess they got it good.
Yeah, that's what they call it. 21 minutes past the hour. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, by the way, according to the New York Times, a little-notice provision in last year's reauthorization of the Patriot Act. What's with all these little-noticed provisions? A little-notice provision in last year's reauthorization of the Patriot Act basically gives Gonzo, Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, the guy who bragged that George W. Bush never spent more than 20 minutes reviewing a death penalty case because his summaries never went more than 6 pages long, of the cases, and 100% of the death penalty cases that came to George W. Bush, he said, yeah, execute them. Gonzo now has the ability to speed up death penalty cases in California and other states, including the power to shorten the time that death row mates have to appeal convictions in federal courts. Isn't that sweet? Yeah, let's become a more brutal nation. Let's kill more people to show how wrong killing is. Mitt Romney, turns out, is worth $250 million, the guy who bought the Iowa straw poll. My prediction is this guy is going nowhere. In fact, there's a lot of speculation out there. You know, Ron Paul's been on this program a number of times. He and I strongly disagree on just about everything, and I respect him because he at least is honest about his positions and has a consistent philosophy. He's essentially a libertarian Republican. And he's anti-Iraq war, and he's getting a lot of traction. I mean, he's showing up in a lot of these polls, particularly the locals, doing really well. And Ron Paul had about as many people who showed up physically for the Iowa straw poll as Romney did. And Romney was paying to bus people in. And 40,000, 50,000 people paid to vote. But fewer than 20,000 votes were counted by the electronic vote counting machines. I don't think there's a conspiracy there, frankly, but some folks are scratching their heads. Anyhow, former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney divested part of his $250 million, $250 million retirement fund, stash, I don't know what you call it, divested it from companies doing business in Iran, but still holds stock in oil companies that do business in Sudan, where the government is just accused of a small issue of genocide. Tomorrow, by the way, just ahead, these are heads up from the Center for American Progress's Think Progress, their Think Fast report today. Tomorrow, a three-judge panel will hear arguments on whether a legal battle relating to George Bush's NSA spying program can go forward. The outcome could determine whether the courts will ever rule on the legality of surveillance conducted by the NSA without judicial oversight between 2001 and January 2007. In other words, is this administration ever going to be held accountable? Maybe not. Maybe not. I mean, there is this absolutely bizarre twist that the only way that you can try to sue or whatever, Gonzo and company, or Bush for that matter, for spying on you, and this is the giant catch-22 that I believe the ACLU is sponsoring this lawsuit. I could be wrong. But there was a coalition of groups who sued the administration saying, you spied on us, that's criminal, therefore we should be able to see the results of that spying and we should be able to have some sort of compensation. And the court ruled that because they couldn't prove that they'd been spied on, they had no standing to sue the Bush administration. And they said, but the only way we can find out if we were spied on is by suing them. And the court said, yep, that's right, but you can't sue them, so you can't find out if you were spied on. And if you don't know that you were spied on, if you can't prove that you were spied on, then you have no basis to sue them for spying on you. This is how weird it's gotten. And this is why I keep saying, you know, if this was a Democratic administration, the Republicans would be out there every single day going, we know that Bill Clinton guy who's president is spying on us, the Republicans. He's reading our emails. He's listening to us. That's what the Republicans would be saying. And that's a meme that every American can identify with. Oh, they're spying on me for political purposes. They're spying on me for financial gain. They're spying on me for some ulterior motive. Why are the Democrats not pointing this out? That it may well be that this administration has actually been spying on Democrats. After all, you did have a guy working out of Orrin Hatch's office, Senator Orrin Hatch from Utah, who hacked into Teddy Kennedy's personal computer in the Senate, or Senate computer, for over a year and was reading all his emails on how the Democrats, you know, what strategies they were going to use on the judicial appointments. And thus the Republicans were able to do end runs around every single effort by the Democrats to stop these toxic judicial appointments during the time that the Bush was running the thing. Anyhow, 27 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
That sounds like a plan. 34 minutes past, or ask Carl Rove, whatever he's smoking. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. By the way, Friday of this week, I'll be in Los Angeles, August 17th, doing the show in the morning from our affiliate K-Talk, KTLK in Burbank, and then at the Landmark West LA Theater and the Arclight Hollywood Theaters at 4:30 and 6:30 for the opening of Leonardo DiCaprio's new movie, The 11th Hour. And on Monday, I'll be in New York City on the August 20th at the Landmark Sunshine. On Tuesday in New York City, it's screening liberally at the Tank at 9 p.m. And on Friday, August 24th, in New York City, I'll be doing the show live from our affiliate WWRL there. And on August the 24th, on Friday, we'll be in San Francisco doing the show live from the Quake, KQKE, and also the San Francisco Landmark Embarcadero is where the movie is going to play, the 11th hour. So you can find all that stuff over at TomHartmann.com. Just click on Tom's schedule, and you'll track it down. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Paul in Eugene, Oregon. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Hey, thank you for the discussion on the health care. I just have lost my parents, and I watched and had to manage much of what went on. And sage advice by that gentleman, very smart. I think I've talked to you in past, and I would hope we could continue the discussion or go somewhere else with it on what, when these people in 18 months are out of office, we are going to be able to do with them. My suspicion is Karl Rove, who's now not in the White House, should be able to be subpoenaed, and they can't use executive privilege. And we need to go after these guys.
Well, first of all, they can use executive privilege. They're doing that with Karen Myers right now, and she's, son of a gun, and she's gone. But, you know, point well made, Paul, and it's going to depend on whether or not the Democrats, frankly, are willing to stand up to them. And this is where we need to be saying to the Democrats, and particularly the Democratic leadership, not, bad Democrats, wimpy Democrats, not that. We need to be saying, we're here with you. We will stand with you. Get a spine. Get out there. Take these people on. We would like to see some accountability. Not because, isn't it a terrible thing that they win elections, or isn't it a terrible thing that Karl Rove does sneaky stuff? It's not that at all. It's because they have corrupted the Constitution of the United States, and they've poisoned the political process. And we need to say to future generations of Americans, to future generations of politicians, to current politicians, and to the rest of the world, we in the United States do not tolerate this kind of thing. This is not how our country was conceived. This is not our idea of small d democracy in a small r republic. And we're going to go back to the founding principles of this nation. We are going to hold these folks accountable. Absolutely has to be done. Scott in Springfield, Illinois. Hey, Scott.
Hi, Tom. Hey, earlier you were talking about Stephen Baldwin going over to Iraq over there and promoting it, and how you didn't think that how fair it was that Bush is promoting his religion to the troops.
Well, it's not a matter of fair or not fair. It's a matter of what's good for our military, what's good for our nation, and what's good for the troops. And this, in my opinion, is not good for any of the three. Or for that matter, what's good for Christianity. I don't think it's good for the religion either.
Exactly. And Bill Berkowitz has a wonderful article over at Smirking Chimp. Faith the Nation, Part 5-4, in which they described how the Supreme Court made another decision reversing our ability to challenge the executive branch's promotion of one religion, that the executive branch is above the freedom of religion, that it's okay for the president to promote his religion above everybody else's, that there's no longer a freedom of religion.
This are you talking about the decision? I didn't realize it was Supreme Court, but I thought it was just a federal court that the faith-based initiative programs were not unconstitutional. Is that what you're talking about?
No, it says on Monday, June 25th, the United States Supreme Court ruled that the taxpayers have no right to challenge discretionary spending by the executive branch. The 5-4 ruling in the case of Jay Hind, the deputy assistant to the president and director of the White House office of faith-based.
Right. We're talking about the same thing. Yeah. Okay. So it was the Supreme Court. I'm sorry. I thought it was a federal appeals court. I remember when it happened. And the decision was essentially that if the executive branch, if the administration wants to give money to religious organizations, to churches, that that's not a violation of the Constitution.
Exactly.
And Scott, I share your outrage.
Is changing our country. The one third of the country that actually supports the president is somehow supposedly saying the other two-thirds don't matter.
You're absolutely right, Scott, and it's wrong. It is absolutely wrong. And, in fact, I'm going to, in the first hour of the program tomorrow, I'm going to be sharing with you some thoughts of Justice Scalia on this and in this direction, and we will actually dig into this topic a little more deeply, what's going on with the Reich in this country. Ron in Detroit, Michigan. Hey, Ron, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Tom?
Fine. What's up?
Well, first of all, I'd like to say that this war in Iraq, back to the war, this is a genocide. And another thing is, if you're a Christian and you support this war, you're not a Christian. You're not a Christian at all. And my other comment is what happened down here in Texas with this guy. You know, they won't even let with a funeral service down there. That's appalling. You can't tell me that people in that church, none of them are sinners, okay?
You're talking about the church that would not perform a burial service for a guy because a military service member who died in Iraq because they learned that he was gay.
Right, and Tom, and on another point,
it's
here,
tragic.
If they're for, you know, if you're for the war, then guys like Rush Limbaugh, let them go fight this war. I know that will never happen, and it's unrealistic, but get off, you know, these people in these churches that are behind this war, go fight in the war over there.
Yeah, there you go. No, exactly. And in fact, that's one of the, that's one of the things that, yeah, absolutely. This is, that's one of the things that Max Blumenthal did. The college Republican tour, he went around to Republican, you know, young Republicans, meetings on college campuses and stuck microphones in front of these young Republicans as they were going, yeah, yeah, we need the war. Yeah, we need to have more troops. Yeah, let's have a sir. And he said, why don't you join? And they were like, you know, you could hear the birds. You know, and then they would say things like, well, I can't, I have other priorities, or I'm just too busy, or, you know, stuff like that. It's hilarious, actually. And you can see it over at MaxBlumenthal.com. Kathy in White Lake, Michigan. Hey, Kathy.
Hi. Something happened this weekend that really has me upset, and I didn't know if you had heard about it or not. I was polled over the phone this weekend, and the questions start out, you know, do you approve of Bush or don't you approve? And it goes on like that. But as soon as they ask you, are you Republican or Democrat? Then the answers, the questions kind of change. And like, you know, they
so you answered that you were a Democrat.
Right.
And then they said,
and then the questions got, okay, do are you self-employed or do you work for someone else? Well, I pushed out self-employed. And then the questions were all about where in the company, you know, how many do you have work for you and stuff like that. But then it goes to, where in the company are you at? Are you president? Are you vice president? Are you secretary? And I'm like, it does not apply. So, but they don't give you does not apply. They give you, right. I don't know. So after like five or six of these, I didn't want to push I don't know because I sound like an idiot. But I don't, but it wouldn't go on unless I pushed something. And one of the questions that really irritated me was, are you married with children? Are you single with children? Or are you single without children?
There Kathy, did the group that placed this robo poll to you identify itself at the beginning?
No, no.
So it's conceivable that this was not even political. You know, they weren't saying things like, you know, did you know that your member of Congress has been sleeping around or something like that? I mean, they didn't say something that was like inflammatory. They were asking these profile questions. It almost sounds to me like this may not be political. This might be some corporation that is trying to build a telephone list, a telemarketing list that they can sell, because you can sell, if you have demographic and psychographic information on people, and you have their financial background, you know what their status is, you know whether they're employed or not, you know whether they're married or not, you know where they live, and you have their phone number, you can sell those phone numbers on the open market for $1 to $3 a piece. And so what this company may be doing is gathering information to simply build a mailing list and sell it. This might have just been a commercial thing.
Well, then in the beginning they were asking me different questions on how I felt about President Bush's.
Right, which, you know, could have been either, it could have A, been a way to get you to think that this was a political thing so you would give them information that they could sell, or it might have been that this was, you know, one of the political parties, you know, trying to profile things, but
well,
that's
I
very
just,
strange. It's very strange.
I just felt, like, trapped because it made me sound, that you can say, don't ask you anywhere, they ask you if you were.
Well, here's the bottom line, Kathy. Whenever you get a call that purports to be a poll, if it's not from a pollster who you recognize the name of, you know, just my personal recommendation would be not to participate. But Kathy, I got to move along. Thank you for the heads up. That's very interesting, and I wish you the best. Jim in Missoula, Montana. Hey, Jim, got about a minute before a break. What's up?
Oh, I was just going to say that I think that it's really interesting how difficult it is to get information out of the administration, yet they want to go to excessive extremes to get information out of everybody else.
Yeah.
The
absolutely.
It takes place to get information out of people, but
well, and yesterday we were talking about how China is now is doing what we're doing with the Real ID Act, in my opinion, which is having everybody carry around a microchip that you can scan. You could literally drive by a crowd and know the social security number of everybody in the crowd, the medical status of everybody in the crowd, what they have purchased on their credit cards, everything that they've done in their lives, where they live, who, whether or not they're married, everything. And these are instruments of control. And the Chinese are aggressively doing this, and they're doing it with the help of American companies. And the Real ID Act has put into place this national system. You've got some states that are fighting it and some that are saying that they're not going to participate, but it's federal law right now to essentially have this place in place. I mean, this is Freaky. 45 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program, your radio support group for We the People on Air America Radio.
It's the family that grieves for a lost loved one. It's the soldier who won't leave till the job is done. It's the addict trying to turn his life around. It's picking yourself up off the ground when you've been knocked down. We carry on when our lives come undone.
In the face of George W. Bush, even in the face of the Republicans, even in the face of Karl Rove, we carry on. Special hi to Matthew and John. Here I got two books of the New Testament sitting with Matthew and John from Heads Up TV, HEADZUP.TV. And this is on their homepage, a Karl Rove press conference.
Heads up.
Today I announce my resignation because...
Wait, let me guess. You're going to follow your protege, Tim Griffin, and work on Fred Thompson's campaign?
No, some new scandal's going to break, like wiretapping Democratic politicians.
Ooh, or vote caging.
Oh, you're in the D.C. Madam scandal, right?
Wait, I got it. It's Jeff Gannon. You're sleeping with Jeff Gannon, the prostitute reporter.
I'm stepping down to spend time with my family. No, really, it's the gay hooker, right?
Yeah. Well, time will tell. Time will tell. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number, and Tom in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, listening on WPTT. Hey, Tom, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Tom, I would argue that we've got three parties in Congress, and or maybe we have a party and a coalition. The Democrats are clearly a coalition, and they're split. You've got blue dogs that'll vote with the Republicans, and I think Harry Reid has a very, very difficult time running the show. I don't think of them as being necessarily wimpy. I see them as being having a very difficult to lead party.
Yeah. This is the point that I was making last week. Is that the Democratic Party has always been an extremely inclusive party. I mean, that's part of the appeal of it. The downside is it's like herding cats. And,
that's right.
And the Democratic Party has not gone through the kind of purge that the Republican Party has gone through over the last 15 years. It's not monolithic. You could argue that the Democratic Party actually did that in the late 30s, but it wasn't as a result of discipline imposed by Franklin Roosevelt from the top down, although he was a bit of an autocrat. It was because his policies, there was a huge national consensus behind his policies. Now, with the Republicans, there's not a huge national consensus behind their policies, never has been. So the way that they impose order is by punishing people inside their party who stray. But on the Democratic side, no, you're absolutely right. It is more of a coalition between the Blue Dog Democrats, the conservative Democrats, the kind of Joe Lieberman Democrats to a certain extent, and on the other hand, the progressive Democrats, members of the progressive caucus, and then you know, you've got a whole bunch who are in between, who are representing districts in some cases that are relatively moderate, whatever that means. I mean, you know, you've got to be careful with language here sometimes, but anyhow, let's go from Pittsburgh to Pittsburgh. John in Pittsburgh listening in also on WPTT. Hey, John, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I was wondering if you know anything about this. I read an article that Hillary Clinton's campaign manager, Mark Penn, works for an anti-union PR firm.
I do not know anything about that, John. I'm sorry. I can tell you, having run a PR firm, that sometimes you end up with a wide variety of clients, but, you know, typically you would want clients that are at least philosophically aligned with it. I just don't know. I don't know. I'll keep an eye out on this, and, you know, we'll see what I can find out for you. Kathy in Portland, Oregon, listening on KPOJ. Hey, Kathy, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I had a thought about the fundamentalism attack
on the military, and I just am a high school teacher, and I have seen so many young men who, through their fundamentalist churches, that's what makes them make their decision to join the military, and in particular, some of these young men in the Marine Corps. And my husband was a Marine, my brother was a Marine, and I think that this administration has managed to corrupt, and they're misusing that ethic that the Marine Corps brings to our nation. And they post, you know, my nephew, he's in boot camp right now, and it's all about, you know, Jesus Christ and bringing it over there, and all Muslims are terrorists, and just, you know.
Doing Wait a minute, they're talking about that stuff. They're talking about that stuff in boot camp, and it's not just, you know, two guys sitting around, you know, in the mess hall. This is coming from people in a command position.
No. This is what the youth bring, because that's what they're learning
in their
private life, and then it leads them to join it. So besides the assault from, say, you know, churches sending postcards or Christmas cards, there are these young men are actually in the military.
Right, and, so it's producing peer pressure.
Yeah, and I'm sure that they're sitting around talking about, you know, and it can be infectious. So I think that to see that sort of corruption of that idea of what that branch of the military stands for, and, you know, are just now being used as pawns in this, basically, you know, this crusade. That's just very disturbing to me to see.
Well said, Kathy, and I absolutely agree. Thank you for the comment. Tosca in Sonoma, California. We only have about a minute here before we get to wrap this hour up, Tosca.
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to refer back to the history that the peoples of the lands that are in the Middle East know well. And I worked 20 years on a free project. It's called historyofthedaughters.com. The maternal blood has not been followed. It's been a prerequisite. And there actually is at Joshua 14:6 following a confirmation of God's direction to Moses that the lands of Hebron and its regions were to belong to the descendants of the Calebites unto perpetuity. And I think people need to look at the history to understand that where some of the hostilities come from, because the motherhood of Caleb, who was in the Exodus and taught the
Hebrews. No, you're right. These are matrilineal societies, or you're right about that anyway. But, you know, what God said to whom, I don't know. 56 minutes past the hour. Thanks so much for being with us. Coming up tomorrow, I'll be debating conservative Devin Herrick on the state of children's health insurance programs, the S-CHIP program, Dr. Robert Morris about the Blue Death, the water we drink, plus the best of the rest of the news and your calls right here on the Tom Hartman program. And don't forget, democracy begins with you. Activism begins with you. Tag, you're it. See you tomorrow.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. For exclusive Tom Hartman archives and more information, visit us online at airamericaradio.com.